Let's start by imagining a manuscript. It's written in the early 20th century, but it's so unsettling that its author's family hides it away for more than 70 years. And they're hiding it away not because it's so obscene and not because it's violent, but because it's too revealing. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. Outwitting the Devil, it's framed as a dialogue between Napoleon Hill and the devil himself, but the danger of the book isn't necessarily theological, it's psychological. Napoleon Hill doesn't present the devil as a horned creature who's ruling some distant underworld. He presents him as a force that operates through habit. It operates through fear, distraction, and unconscious living. The devil in this book doesn't need to possess your soul. He simply needs people to stop thinking for themselves. That is the real provocation of this text. It asks a question that most of us avoid. What forces benefit from my confusion, from my fear, from my procrastination, and from my drifting? This episode is not going to be about a belief in a literal devil. It's more about recognizing the invisible systems, whether those are internal or external. Recognizing these systems that shape behavior while pretending that they don't exist. Before we can understand what Outwitting the Devil is doing, we have to understand what the devil has meant across history, because Napoleon Hill isn't inventing a new figure here. He's really repurposing an old one. So in the Hebrew Bible, the word Satan doesn't originally mean an embodiment of evil. It means the adversary, right, or the accuser. In the book of Job, Satan isn't a rebel god who's opposing Yahweh. He's more of a functionary within the divine court, or a tester. He questions human integrity, he exposes weaknesses, and he pressures virtue. Job's suffering is not caused by cosmic rebellion, but by examination, and this matters. The earliest devil isn't chaos incarnate. He operates more like a form of friction. Only later does this figure start to evolve into something that's closer to the Christian devil, or this cosmic opponent to God. And the shift, it occurs gradually. First, it's influenced by Persian dualism during the Babylonian exile, where you have good and evil, and they're framed as these opposing forces. And then you have Zoroastrian cosmology that introduces something called Angramanu. I'm probably butchering that, but that's how it's spelled, so I'm trying to pronounce it correctly. But anyway, it introduces Angramanu, and that's a destructive spirit opposed to the divine order. And this worldview begins to shape Jewish and later Christian theology. So by the time we reach the New Testament, the devil has shifted roles yet again. He is now the tempter. So in the Gospels, Satan doesn't force Jesus to sin. He offers shortcuts. He offers power without patience, authority without having to suffer, kingdoms without any form of responsibility. The temptation isn't immorality. It's premature sovereignty. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus calls the devil the father of lies, but lies here are not simply false statements. They are distortions of the truth. They are half knowledge that's used without wisdom. Early Christian theologians like Augustine, they later argue that evil is not a substance, but a privation, potentially a lack or a turning away from order rather than a force in its own right. And this reframing is quite crucial. The devil isn't always something added. Often, he's what happens when something essential is missing. So by the time we reach modernity, the devil migrates again, this time from theology into psychology. And Napoleon Hill is writing in this post-Enlightenment world where belief in a literal devil is starting to decline, but belief in unconscious influence is starting to rise. So the devil during this time becomes the voice of everything that's unexamined. And so when Napoleon Hill's devil speaks, he sounds eerily familiar. He speaks like habit. He speaks like fear that's dressed as reason, and even like procrastination could be justified as a form of caution. And the devil thrives in systems that reward conformity and punish independent thought. Not necessarily because those systems are evil, but because they encourage some form of passivity. Now, I think Napoleon Hill's brilliance is recognizing that the devil no longer needs to have a pitchfork. What he needs is a routine. Now, Napoleon Hill, he's best known for Think and Grow Rich. And for those who are listening, you have probably read that book thoroughly. I have read that book thoroughly. And now that I'm sitting here talking about that book, I'm thinking of creating an episode on the last half, which I think would be helpful. Anyway, yes, he's known for Think and Grow Rich, but I think Outwitting the Devil, it reveals something deeper about his work. Hill wasn't primarily interested in money. He was more interested in self-mastery and wealth. In his point of view, it was a byproduct of disciplined thought. So in this book, Hill stages an interrogation. Now, if you've read this book, you know what I'm talking about. It's in a dialogue fashion. They go back and forth and he's asking all sorts of questions. And the devil, to me, is really clever in this book. And so Hill, he asks the devil how he controls people, why fear is so effective, and what allows some individuals to escape manipulation while most don't. And the devil's answers, they're disturbingly precise because they're ordinary. Now, control, as the devil explains, is not achieved through cruelty. It's achieved through something called drifting, which is a state in which a person allows their environment, allows their emotions, and even their habits to dictate their choices. The drifter reacts, but a non-drifter chooses. The book's central teaching is quite uncompromising. If you don't govern your mind, something else will. Let's talk about drifting because this comes up time and time again in the book. Now, drifting is not laziness, it's not ignorance, and many intelligent, capable, well-intentioned people do what's called drifting. So drifting is the absence of conscious direction. And Hill describes drifters as people who live by default. They absorb opinions without any form of examination. They adopt fears that they themselves didn't choose. They delay decisions until circumstances decide for them. And they confuse busyness with purpose and consumption with meaning. So what makes drifting so dangerous is that it feels quite normal. There's no form of announcement. There's no ceremony, there's no fall from grace, and it happens through small deferrals of responsibility. It happens through saying later, or through avoiding discomfort, or through outsourcing authority to institutions, traditions, or even expectations. The devil doesn't need to destroy the drifter. Time will do that on its own. One of the most unsettling insights in Outwitting the Devil is how fear operates. So Napoleon Hill's devil doesn't describe fear as an emotion that has to be eliminated. He describes it as architecture, a structure that shapes behavior long after the feeling itself has passed. Fear of poverty, fear of criticism, fear of illness, fear of aging, fear of loss, fear of death. These fears are not accidental. They're culturally reinforced. They're socially rewarded, and they're rarely examined. So once fear is installed, people police themselves. They self-limit. They abandon ideas before testing them. They accept lives that are far smaller than their capacity because safety itself feels like some form of virtue. Now, Hill doesn't advocate for recklessness, but he advocates for clarity. And much of what we call fear, he argues, is inherited rather than earned. However, the good thing is that it begins to dissolve under examination. So perhaps the most misunderstood aspect of Outwitting the Devil is its insistence on discipline. In contemporary spiritual culture, discipline is often framed as rigid or oppressive, but Hill likes to frame it as liberation. Discipline is the ability to direct attention, to direct emotion, and effort towards some chosen end. Without it, desire fragments, your energy might leak, and life, more often than not, becomes reactive. The devil does admit in the book, though, that disciplined people are quite difficult to influence. They don't respond automatically. They don't confuse impulsive behavior or impulsive thoughts with intuition. They can endure short-term discomfort for long-term alignment. So in this book, Napoleon Hill's philosophy rests on a radical premise. And the premise is that thought precedes reality. Not in that simplistic think positive way, but in a structural way. Thought shapes perception, perception shapes behavior, and behavior shapes the outcome. The devil claims dominion over those who don't choose their thoughts, not because thoughts are magical, but because unexamined thoughts become beliefs and beliefs become identity. So Napoleon Hill offers responsibility rather than offering endless optimism. You may not control everything that happens to you in your life, but you do control how meaning is made, and meaning itself shapes your destiny. Outwitting the devil feels really contemporary because drifting has become institutionalized. Algorithms decide what we see. Speed in life replaces some form of reflection. Outrage replaces our independent discernment. And as we all are aware, distraction in many forms has become increasingly normalized. So the devil that Napoleon Hill describes, they wouldn't need to invent any new method today. He simply just needs to amplify the existing ones. So I think this book would benefit anybody who feels very, very busy and they feel misaligned in some way. Anyone who's sensing that they're living slightly off center, and anyone who wants to reclaim authorship over their own attention, their own time, and their decisions. The goal of Outwitting the Devil is not moral purity, but it is self-direction. Hill doesn't promise happiness in this book whatsoever, but he promises agency, and that is so important. The book is asking you to become a conscious participant in your own life. He's asking you to recognize when fear is being used as a leash on you. He is asking you to question your inherited assumptions and to cultivate discipline, not as a form of punishment, but as a devotion to your own potential. And I think that this book is for anyone who's willing to be uncomfortable in the service of personal freedom. So if the devil in this book is real, he is just as real as a pattern, whether it's a pattern of avoidance or of delay or of unconscious compliance. Outwitting the devil doesn't require any form of heroism. It does require attention, though. It requires choosing thought over your reflexes, choosing direction over doing, again, what he called drifting, and even responsibility over your comfort. The most dangerous question that this book asks is also the simplest question. Who is directing your life when you are not? And once you ask it honestly, you may find that that answer might just change everything. Everyone, I hope that this has been interesting enough today for you to consider reading Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And if you are interested in that and you haven't read Think and Grow Rich, I recommend that book as well. Please, as always, take care of yourselves. Things are quite wild around these parts today. And I look forward to connecting with you soon.